Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc.
First, I just want to say welcome to 2014.
Yeah, woo! All right, it's good to be back. We had a very nice, restful couple of weeks. Lots of eating, lots of drinking.
Lots of cold weather and snow.
Woo! But today it's wonderful. Today it's nice and warm in New York. It's in the 40s. And
but most brace for impact tonight.
Yeah, Canada's coming down like an icy hand and grabbing us by the throat and squeezing. Us.
By the throat, that's a nice... I would have said something different.
Yeah. Trying to keep it PG.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's January, and we have some bipolar weather going on, and not a lot of gardening going on right now in the Northeast, but as gardeners, we're always working and thinking and dreaming, thinking about spring, and in the winter is when, you know, you take an inventory of what you've done, what you want to do, and you look at your tools.
And you sharpen your tools.
You sharpen them, you
on
clean
so
them.
On so many levels.
Yes, exactly. But what separates us from the apes are our tools, right? Really, that's kind of the definition of humans, right?
And speaking of that, our horticultural honor roll of the week. Where we honor the past that has helped create our landscape and gardening future. So the first honoree of 2014 is a man named John Ames in the 18th century, who is a cast iron metal forger. Now, a lot of you know these tools, Ames garden tools.
Yeah.
Garden tools are not a modern day invention. You know, their history coincides with human development and can begin around 10,000 years ago. This is the period when the earliest record of garden tools can be found. In fact, some good information is the Garden History Museum in England.
Oh, that's a great place.
Which is a really fun, quirky little museum in the bottom of a church.
Yeah, we didn't get to go when we went to London.
No, but it's on my bucket list of garden things to do. Anyway, so, you know, we're going to talk for a minute about the Neolithic period and the domestication of plants in our travels to John Ames in the 18th century.
Okay.
So the microlith was invented during this Neolithic period and consisted of a small, sharp stone blade that was set into a handle made of wood, bone, or antler. I'm sure we've all seen examples of this in museums and books. And this was really the first multi-tool. It resembled a small spade, and it can be used to dig and clip and cut plant material. It's extremely primitive. It can be used to clear land, but this time period also gives birth to many other gardening tools, which include the hoe and the garden plow and the scythe. So all these tools were made in the same manner, and they consisted of a stone-shaped tool that was attached to some natural material handle. The Bronze Age saw the development of the smelting process, where this process took in tin, copper, and iron and separated these into different ores. So the purified ore was then turned into metals that could be easily worked. Tools made from this new material were solid pieces, and they were sharper, and they lasted longer. So then during the Han Dynasty in China, a wooden version of the seed drill was developed in the 3rd century BC. In the 2nd century BC, the wheelbarrow was developed in China, and the wheelbarrow itself has not really changed from those created so long ago.
It still is the same basic.
A wheel is a wheel is a wheel with a bucket.
Yeah. You know? It's a stone. It's a primitive tool.
Right. But it still works. It's perfect. Yeah. Right. So once America was discovered, garden tool development continued by the invention of the first cast iron shovel. This was created by John Ames in 1774 and consisted of a broad blade on a long handle. So when pioneering blacksmith Captain John Ames began making America's first metal shovels in 1774, colonists were just beginning their quest for independence, for a country that was literally building from the ground up. Quality metal shovels and other tools quickly became our essential components in nearly every endeavor that built our nation. So the Ames shovels were used in numerous landmark events, including the groundbreaking for the B&O Railroad in Baltimore, the statue of the Transcontinental Railroad, the search for California gold in the 1840s, the installation of the Statue of Liberty, Admiral Byrd's exploration of Antarctica, the building of the Hoover Dam, the creation of Mount Rushmore, and the construction of the interstate highway system. So these are all Ames shovels. The invention, while of course, you know, other this invention, while of course other agricultural tool companies existed, it's still very important to the founding landscape and the building of America as we know it today.
That's pretty interesting. So the brand is 200 years old.
Yes. And they started in Massachusetts, and the building is still there. It's, I believe it's no longer the tool company, but the, you know, you can go and see the building and take a tour. And
well, you know, when you were talking about the Paleolithic tools, Alice, I was thinking the same tools that were used for gardening and for, you know, were also weapons.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, it's a fine line.
And how
right.
come, and I was thinking the same is true of the shovel, the modern equivalent, right. like in how many horror movies have
right.
there been,
right.
somebody gets knocked out with a shovel, that's
right.
like the first thing,
yeah.
you know?
And it's like what you carry in your car for protection and to dig yourself out of snowbanks.
Yes, exactly. So. It's still a multi-tool.
Anyway, let's talk about our guest today. We have an amazing friend, a longtime friend. We met him on Facebook and we've become good Facebook buddies, Blake Schreck and the Garden Tool Company. Welcome, Blake.
Well, thank you very much, ladies.
Welcome back. Blake was on a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And we wanted to have him back to talk about where he's been and what he's done in the past couple of years, how he's grown the company and some other aspects of the business that we didn't get to cover last time, Blake. So thank you for coming back again and joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We know that winter is a little bit of a downtime for people, so it's good. It's good to talk. So Blake, you, from what I recall last time, you are a certified tool geek. That's your own self-designation, right?
Well, yes. I was a carpenter for a long time,
yeah.
and I learned a long time ago that it pays to buy the better tools. So ever since then, except for garden tools, I didn't learn my lesson until just a few years ago.
Well, you guys are in Colorado. You need good tools to dig in that soil, don't you?
it is, especially the rocks that are in. But, of course, in the Northeast, you deal with that, too.
Sure, so. Yeah.
So we know the story, but tell our audience about how your experience with the brand new edger from a big box store is kind of how it bent and how that sort of led you down the path to making a better tool company.
Yeah, I mean, it is just like that. like so many gardeners, you know, buying from the big box is convenient. And
yes.
these days that we're all so busy, you know, it's easy just to go over there and pick up a tool, but after having bent so many times, my wife and I thought, there's got to be better tools out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened to be that I was laid off, and we were kind of looking for a business to go into. And we said, you know, surely there's better tools out there. We just have to find them. And, well, sure enough, there are better tools out there. And we decided to open Garden Tool Company.
So how did you go about researching good tool companies? There's so many, I would imagine, that say they're good.
there really are a lot of good tool companies. We decided from the onset that we wanted tools that avid gardeners, people that garden all the time and depended on their tools, something they could count on.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that we wanted the best tools that had warranties that would companies that would stand behind their tools. Mm-hmm. And that was really the hardest thing to find in this day and age, was somebody that really wanted to stand behind their tools.
So like if somebody bent it or broke it, they would replace
right.
it.
There's some recourse, right?
Right, and you wouldn't have to stand in line at a return store, and you know somebody was going to be there at the end of the phone. In our case, being an online store, to say, "No, it shouldn't have broken, and we'll send you a new one out now."
Kind of like the L.L. Bean of tools. No matter what
That's
happens,
right.
you know, L.L. Bean. No matter what, they stand behind their goods.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And a lot of gardeners remember Smith and Hawken, and they
yeah.
were a company that sold quality products and
yeah.
and stood behind them, and they kind of went by the wayside, as we all know.
Yeah, well, and my frustration is, you know, so you go to Home Depot and you go to Lowe's or whatever, and you buy a tool, and then, you know, 2 weeks later it breaks, the handle breaks off, or it separates, mm-hmm. you know, from the shaft of the iron, you know, part that it fits into. And then you go back and you return it, and you do stand in that line, and then they just give you the equivalent of a second junky tool, you know?
Right, right.
Instead of being,
you know,
like...
And they're counting on you to just, you know, to go buy another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a you know, a replaceable product that didn't cost you much to begin with, so why not, instead of standing in the line, oh, heck, it's easier just to buy another one. So the old one ends up in the landfill, and... The circle just goes around and round.
Right. So then tell us what makes a good tool as someone who represents tools.
And probably test them.
Right. The biggest things that make a quality tool is the materials that they're made out of and the designs. Well, the warranty is included with these better tools, but the... Most of these older manufacturers, like the two Dutch companies that we represent,
uh-huh.
they've been in business for over 100 years.
Uh-huh.
So they've been refining the metals that they use in their products for years and years, you know, hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've come up with the science of the metal that works best for their tools.
Mm-hmm. And it's not bronze. It's not bronze.
It's copper. No. And it's not copper.
I would like a bronze weeder.
You know, one of our manufacturers makes it out of carbon steel, but they like the idea of adding boron to their steel. Carbon steel is a great steel, and they add boron to make it even harder than a typical good quality steel is.
Mm-hmm.
So they go the extra mile to make it a better product.
Well, let's talk about steel for a second, because this is really interesting to me. And also, as Alice knows, I'm in the middle of watching Breaking Bad, so I'm really into chemistry right now.
Are there any blue?
I want to talk about let's talk about metal alloys. All
yeah.
right, let's go a little deeper into this. So you know probably more about steel and metal than you wanted to, Blake. Right? You've learned quite a bit. Tell us a little bit about the different types and different processes of making these tools.
Well, different steels with different additives. You can make them hard. They can be soft for different purposes or mm-hmm. hard for different purposes. With a garden product, you want it tough enough that it won't bend easily, but have a little bit of give into it in case you hit a rock or something like that.
Yeah,
so, right.
So
yeah.
There's a fine line between too hard and too soft.
Mm-hmm.
And the additive of carbon goes a long way to high carbon steel, makes a steel that's perfect for garden tools. Also, what they do is they heat treat it
mm-hmm.
so that it gains extra strength. And there's a lot of science that I don't even know about that these guys have it down to an art about what temperature they have to bring these steels up to and then cool them at a certain rate so that they can make the hardest steel possible that is still flexible enough to be a good garden tool.
So like high
carbon. A lot more than I know.
Right. So high carbon steel is something to look for
right,
on a
right.
label, right? Or
right,
carbon steel.
Right.
That tells you that there's, it's not, you know, because some people might say, oh, steel is steel, you know, it's the same, but it's not.
And you can find carbon steel at the big box stores. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is in a good quality product, for instance, on a spade, it'll be thinner at the tip where it needs to be so it can slice into the soil easily, but it's thicker where the more up towards the top where the most stress is going to be on the shovel itself or the spade. And something you buy at a big box store is one thickness all throughout.
Right.
They just take a sheet of steel and stamp it into a shape.
Right.
So the forging process of a good quality starts out as a chunk of metal. I mean, it's basically a block of metal, and they heat it and shape it to a certain thickness at one end all the way through the whole blade. So there's a lot of work that goes into it than what you see.
It's good to know that, because I think when people see a price tag, let's say for a trowel of $30 or more, right? When
right.
they know they
think
can,
like, oh, I'm not gonna,
I'm
right.
not gonna. But I have $30 trowels, and I will have them my whole life, mm-hmm. you know, unless I lose them, you know. None of them have ever broken.
Like me.
Yeah, I bury them, you know. Sometimes I paint the handle weird colors, like oddball colors, or I leave them out to rust. But even when I've been careless and let them rust, and then I sand them, they come back. You know, they haven't rusted all the way through. Good quality
right.
tools last. So to me, it's worth buying, you know. And Alice and I, we, for our crew, you know, we go through a lot of shovels and pruners, you know.
Sure.
And we don't buy the cheap stuff. You know, because if you're going to work 8 hours in the field digging and planting, you want to have a right size tool and a good tool.
And one that's comfortable.
Yeah.
Because
right. you're not just, you know, you're not just like sort of playing in the garden for an hour. You're working, mm-hmm. you know.
And that's another thing that goes into the quality of some of these older companies is that they've been messing or experimenting with the design of these tools as much as they have the quality of the steel. So they've, you know, tried it, and they've, you know, so their designs have lasted for a century or more. So
right.
their comfort is a big thing, that the wood that they use in the handle, it's got to be tough but forgiving, and you know, take some of the vibration out of the hard work. So
yeah.
there's a lot of thought with the design that goes in it.
So what is your best seller, Blake? I see that you rep several companies, and we're going to talk in the second half of the show about some of those companies. But what is your best seller? Like, what's your bread and butter?
Actually, we have the two Dutch companies that we sell the most of are Sneebor and DeWitt.
Uh-huh.
And they one chooses to make their products or their tools out of stainless, and the other one is carbon steel with boron. So mm-hmm. equally tough steels, just different ways about going about it. But they both, it's hard to really go wrong with either one of them. They're both 100-year-old companies. Every process that they do is about the best quality that they can make. And
right.
they're still family-owned companies. Mm. You know, for that long.
Yeah. Now, is it a trowel that most people are buying from you, or is it a big old shovel or a cultivator? Like, what are most people buying online?
And you probably know the answer to this as well as anybody. It's a weeder.
A weeder. Yeah.
A weeder.
Yeah.
I mean, every gardener's worst nightmare is the weed.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And there's countless weeders out there, but the weeder is it. That's what we sell the most of.
Yeah, right. Because that's the worst job.
Well,
it is.
And the thing is, the weeder is so important because it actually can act as a trowel if it loosens up the soil enough, you know.
Right.
So it not only unroots unwanted plants, but then mm-hmm. it can be a digger as well, and it makes then sliding a nice old trowel into the soil so much
sure.
better, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, you're
like the
Hori
Hori. That's a great all-purpose tool.
Yeah,
that's one of our best sellers.
Yeah.
Plus, it's
and
so
any,
fun
anybody
to say Hori Hori.
Anybody that's looking for a gift for a gardener, that's usually one of our first suggestions.
Oh yeah,
most gardeners that haven't used one don't know how they've gardened so long without it.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. It does everything. I weed between my pavers. Because I don't like to carry a whole big basket of tools.
No.
You know, I'm kind of like
it's a knife. A cultivator.
It cuts twine.
It's a trowel. Like it's a little bit of everything. And yeah, it scares the heck out of people.
Yes, it does. I love dividing perennials with it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
My son, who's really not into gardening, when he saw that in the garage, he was like, "Mom, this is incredible."
Yeah.
You know?
I once took the car to be washed, and I had four hori horis in like in different pockets. And the guys cleaning the car thought I was a psycho. They kept laughing and like looking at me, and I was like. Keep laughing, boys. Keep laughing. You never know.
Yeah, our gardeners love it, too. They're like, get more hori horis. Get more hori horis. Yeah.
So, Blake, really quick, before the break, we have to go take a break. But you chose to be an online tool company or, you know, doing sales online versus a brick-and-mortar store. That's a pretty... a bold choice and a difficult choice, I would imagine. How do you market yourself, and you know, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, it's no doubt the easiest way to start a business,
the
least expensive. So that's why we chose it originally. And it is tough because most people want to, when they're buying something, especially with the high-end tools that we sell. You'd like to have it in your hand. You'd like to feel it, feel the balance, that kind of thing. So we chose to go online for the low cost, but we realized that we had to, in order to succeed, that we had to show them as many pictures as they could so we could answer any question they wanted through pictures about the size and the... But, the customer service, we had to meet everybody in customer service. So that's... That's what we do. We try to,
be the best
source.
Yeah, and I think that obviously the tools that you're choosing to carry are more sophisticated than a box store. So I think you're dealing with a population of people that are already looking for something specific. So it makes sense to not have the overhead of a brick and mortar store, because you're dealing with a specific population.
And that's changing too, because we moved from Fort Collins, where we were last year, to the Denver metro area.
Uh-huh.
And we bought a building. Our success is we had to get out of our house.
Uh-huh, right.
So we've moved to the Denver area and bought a building. We still do and have been our online business, but we'll soon open a showroom as well.
You are. That's great. Congratulations, Blake.
Well, thank you.
Good.
And there's going to be a lot more agriculture, or shall I say horticulture, in Colorado.
Yes.
Right.
And a lot more people needing
to... Can you call it horticulture?
Yeah.
I'll call it what, there'll be a lot more growing, and they're going to need tools. They're going to need pruners, specifically.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wish you success.
Well, thank you.
Hang on that note, we have to take a break. Okay. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Blake, stay on the line. We'll be back in a few moments.
You are listening to America by Four Lincolns on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from We Dig Plants.
This is Chris Howell from Cain Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cain5.com.
Hello, and welcome back to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. Today we're talking about tools, and garden tools. And we have a great guy, Blake Schreck, and his company, Garden Tool Company, that he founded with his wife, Anne. And let's talk, Blake, about some of the companies that you represent, because they're some old companies.
In fact,
European,
mostly,
right, yeah. European, which is very interesting. So founded in 1730 is Burgeon and Ball in Sheffield, England. And I read on their website that they actually got started with sheep shearing pruners.
Hmm.
That's correct.
Yeah. So how did you like come to learn of them and want to represent them?
We learned about them just searching, luckily, for the internet. You know, you can find anything on the internet. So we found them and actually found a distributor. So that made it a lot easier that we weren't importing at first. But their reputation of a company that has made quality products for oh so long, you know, is a reason that we got involved with them. They're just a company with a long pride in making quality tools. So they were what we were looking for. They had that product, quality product that we were looking for.
Is it still made in England? Are the products still made in England, Blake?
They are made in England. actually, I think a lot of them, like a lot of companies, they are starting to move to different places.
Right. Cost of manufacturing, right.
Right, right. And the DeWitt and the Sneeboer tools that we carry from Holland, now they're still family-owned companies, all still built, you know, fifth generation kind of companies.
So. I loved the Sneeboer, the company logo. It's by appointment of the Netherlands in 1913. And their tagline was, when you buy one of these tools, you don't actually own it, but you're taking care of it for the next generation.
That's great.
Nobody has sentiment like that anymore, you know?
Ann and I were lucky enough, they celebrated their 100th anniversary last February.
Uh-huh.
And they invited us over for the celebration. So we were lucky enough to go over for their 100th anniversary and had a great time, met with them and the people from DeWitt. So,
oh, how fun.
Yes, it was a great time and great people.
Did you see some great gardens when you were there?
You know, in February, it's not the best time to see gardens in Holland.
Right,
So we'd like to visit again when in spring or summer, and we will someday, but the weather was not the best for the garden. Actually, we did go to a big orchid house, so it was very nice. It was huge, full of orchids. It was hard to believe.
Well, if the Dutch don't know how to build tools, I mean, the Dutch and the English, I mean, the Burgeon and Ball, they're English, and DeWitt and Sneeboer are Dutch. I mean, they are horticulture, right?
Yeah, that's garden history right there.
So is there no American company that's like, you know, making great tools now? I mean, all these hipsters in Williamsburg, aren't they?
Well, let me say that when I was doing research, I was actually looking, it seems on Etsy, there's a lot of these small iron worker,
urban blacksmith,
but people are starting to make lines, and they seemed very sophisticated, you know.
Mm.
So I think, what do you think? Have you heard of any of these companies? Are you repping any of them, Blake?
You know, when we first started in business, it was our intention to sell only United States tools, but at the time, nobody was making any that wanted to put a
warranty.
A warranty on it.
America.
Well, now, since then, we sell Red Pig tools.
Oh, Red Pig!
Red guy out of Oregon. He and his wife hand make all the tools. So we sell some of their tools, and real happy to sell their tools.
Uh huh.
So yeah, there's other ones that like you say are making one of a kind tools.
It's starting.
That are really nice.
There's actually a great knife company that just opened in Gowanus, Brooklyn, and he's making beautiful steel knives, and they're exquisite.
It's great to see these small companies that are coming around and saying we're gonna do this and we're gonna do quality.
Yeah, honoring the tradition of it, you know.
Sure, you bet. Because we've lost so much of that.
Yeah, but I have to say, I love my Haws watering can that Carmen actually helped facilitate.
I did.
My acquisition of my Haws watering can. It was a gift from the first public garden that I installed. It was a big deal. You know, it was my first big capital project. And there was a big ceremony, and Carmen was the... Carmen, you know, used to work for Smith & Hawken, mm-hmm. so that's how she was introduced to Haws. And then, so because of this big occasion, Carmen said to my boss, you need to give her a gift.
I forgot about that.
And Carmen said, get her a Haws watering can. So that's how I always think of it when I use my...
Yeah, and I love them because they have, Smith & Hawken would have... so many different I think at the time they were the only importers were direct importers of those cans, and they're not cheap, very expensive watering cans, and they had every shape imaginable and different rosettes, and like to me it was so Victorian, you know, having these like big conservatory cans, because most of the ones that you see are plastic and hideous and like fall apart, you know, over time. So it's really great that you're still carrying them.
It's just like you said. It's another company that still cares about quality. They've been around forever.
Yeah.
They're not going to compromise. They are expensive.
Yeah.
But it's because they're building the best can you can buy.
But they'll last forever.
It's going to last you 20 or 30 years.
Right.
You know. It every day.
And that arm reaches just forever. You know what I mean? You don't have to get on a ladder. You've got 4 feet of length in front of you to water with, you know, and it's
even the small ones. I remember we used to sell the little copper ones. You know, they're beautiful. They're not just well made, but they're beautiful, Blake.
And that's what I was going to say, is that they make the smallest ones all the way up to the largest cans. Mm-hmm. So no matter what type of gardening you do, they've got a can that'll work for you with the long reach or the short reach or the 2.5 gallon, you know, heavy duty ones. The copper one is a work of art.
It is.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, just to go back to that next generation idea of, you know, honoring this heritage and this tradition, you are repping kids' gardening items. And I looked at what your offering is, and I was so pleased, Blake, to not see any plastic. It was so nice to see real tools that were smaller and, you know, kid hand size, but they were serious tools. And if you want to create a serious gardener and really cultivate the industry and these kids' minds, don't dumb it down with some plastic junky thing.
Yeah, that doesn't really work. I always hated when my kid was young and the tools made for kids were...
And they want to
help. They didn't really work.
Yeah.
You know?
Kids want to help, and then you give them a plastic tool and it breaks, and oh well, then they're off to something else, you know?
Right. And these tools, they're built just like the adult-sized tools. They're just smaller.
Right.
So, you know, a person that might even, an adult might even find them handy for container gardening or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, a smaller tool. So they're heavy duty and they're made to, you know, take the beating that we all know kids can do to just about anything.
Right. And to withstand the pressures, you know, and really create a gardener. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Not dumb it down and, you know, make it some activity for an hour, but like really... You can really do something with these tools, you know?
And then not only that, somebody that might have a growing family, they can be passed down from, you know, kid to kid to kid to generations, you know?
Yeah.
It's that kind of quality tool.
Yeah. I have my great-grandfather's cast iron pan, you know? Like, it's that sort of thing. Like, it should be passed down and...
You know, Blake, I, speaking of generations and what Alice was saying, so... I have a lot of tools. Alice does too. Mm-hmm. We kind of like books. We, you know, you see something cool and you buy it, and you know,
you hide it from your husband.
You hide it from your husband. But there's one tool that I really feel attached to, and it was handmade by my grandfather for me. It's a dibble, right? Mm-hmm. And people who don't know what it is, it's sort of like an L-shaped, pointy thing for planting. You know, mm-hmm. you can use it for planting bulbs or small plants or seeds. And, you know, he was in Italy. He died, you know, a number of years ago. But he was a farmer, and he took very good care of his tools. He was very meticulous. And one year I went to visit him in Italy, and he had this wooden dibble. And I said, where did you get that? And he said, I made it. And I said, I want you to make me one, mm-hmm. you know? And wow. one, you know, many months went by. My parents went back to Italy, and they, you know, they brought back. That's the only thing I wanted from him, you know? Yeah. He handmade for me this wooden
That's awesome.
Dibble, yeah. you know, that wow, that I wonderful. Love. And I want to pass that on to my son.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like it's a work of art to me because he made it for me.
Right.
You
right.
know, sure. out of chestnut wood, you know?
Yeah. That's great. That's
so,
great.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about hoses. We can't have a garden tool yeah. conversation without hoses. Tell us the best hose in your opinion.
Well, this could go on as a rant.
I know.
Every gardener hates hoses.
I hate hoses. Yeah.
I mean, they were bad long ago because they kinked, uh-huh. but they were quality. Now you get kinks and no quality, and the bands blow off. We represent a company called Tough Guard, and what they've come out with is a hose that does not kink, and people don't believe us that it doesn't. But it will not, and we've had actually people come by the store or the warehouse here at the building and say, I really don't believe you, so we'll take them out and we'll tie it in a knot and let them try to kink the hose, and it will not kink. The water pressure flows as strong as it ever did, so it's really kind of remarkable. It's just a new design that this hose company, Tough Guard, came up with.
And what's the material? It's a rubber, obviously, but it must be thicker?
It's actually a rubber. It's a thermoplastic, is what it is. So it mixes plastic and rubber together. So it's the toughness of a plastic, but also the flexibility of a rubber. And on top of that, it has a helix coil around it of polyester fiber. So it makes it strong, and it's not only strong and non-kink, but it's about, they say, 35% lighter than a typical hose. So
wow.
it's really got a lot of things going for it.
Does it coil itself?
That's the bane of our existence.
When I have to coil a hose, there are violent thoughts that surge through my brain. I hate
and the springy
hoses.
Ones are much too narrow yeah. of a diameter to really use for what you want to use, you know?
Yeah. Right. You know that it's, you know, all those garden reels that, you know, self-winding garden
yes.
reels
yeah, right. Yeah.
That never ever
no.
work.
No,
no,
it will with this hose. And when you turn the handle and crank it, this hose will actually wind up.
Okay. Well, what's the name of it again? It's a tough.
It's Tough Guard.
Tough Guard. Okay. All
tough
right.
Guard. It's called the perfect garden hose is what they call it.
Is that American? Is that an American?
It is American made, yes.
Oh, really? That's good to hear.
You bet.
So we will keep Alice's rage at bay. We have to get you one, Alice's time.
Yeah, it's. I actually should probably go talk to somebody about my hose rage.
So you just like pick it up and then toss it like in the corner.
It starts. I always have to look at the gardener and be like, "You need to do this. I will. I will do anything else. I will pick up dog poo. I will do anything else." But I will not coil a hose. It is infuriating.
And Alice, actually, with Groundworks, we often give our, believe it or not, and this may sound strange to people who don't live in New York City, but a lot of people in New York don't have hoses.
No.
And after
I can well imagine.
Yeah, and after we make a garden, many times we give them a hose as a gift,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So maybe we should be getting them some Tough Guard
I
hoses.
I think that could be a fun thing.
It'll yeah. help keep, you know, these
the level down.
The level down. Stress level down. We'll look like rock stars.
Yeah. Well, Blake, once again, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
And your company is fabulous. Give us the web address and the contact information.
It's gardentoolcompany.com, and our 800 number is 1-800-830-4019.
And did you guys have a good holiday sales?
Yeah.
Christmas season?
Christmas, we're always surprised. When we first started business, we thought, oh no, it's going to be a downtime because everybody stops gardening. But Christmas is just huge for us. We have free engraving from the two Dutch companies, so You can get a special gift for a friend, you know, friend or loved one with their name on it. So it works out to be a good deal at Christmas.
That's a good gift. That's a great gift item.
Yeah. Fans, are you listening? Yeah. Alice and I would like some engraved tools.
I want an engraved hose.
Yes, I would like a copper hose watering can. Just putting it out there anyway.
Well, good luck with the move and the increased business.
Well, thank you.
And thank you again for joining us and for sharing your knowledge. And you have a fun company. So.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on.
You bet. You bet. You've been listening to We Dig Plants. We just want to remind you to keep gardening and visit nurseries and expand your palette and research your tools and keep great care of them. Call Blake and Ann and ask them questions and buy from them. Just don't grab any old item. It'll be a waste of time and money. So thanks again, Blake and Ann, for joining us. And thanks to Joe G for engineering and Jack Inslee for producing. And to today's sponsor, join us on Facebook, We Dig Plants, Groundworks, Inc. Happy gardening.
See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.